So first, I just have to say I'm completely intimidated by the idea of speaking about wisdom. You know, it's like just the enormity and the kind of the result of, you know, there's the, I talked about the sila samadhi and then the panya or prajna. And so it's this huge, huge subject, you know. So I'm going to try to play a little bit with it, and you will have to indulge me a little, since it is such a, you know, I can hit little pieces of it, but it's such a broad thing. So first indulge, I'm going to read a poem I wrote in Thailand on my way here, actually. So you have to indulge me with that, and we'll see where we go. It's called Caught Between Two Worlds. The marvels of the bougainvillea and the hibiscus, colors that hold one in softness and beauty. Delighted by the visible world, the sea in its blue and turquoise, so inviting. Butterflies dancing in the warm Thai breeze. The jungle and perfect temperature of water and air, with the outer world so enchanted. Why? See, feel the transparency of such an ideal world. Easy to want to keep this physical world in such a perfect order. Yet a mind trained to disassemble, deconstruct the visible. Release the entire known world into its truth of its dependency, its co-arising. The sheer emptiness of it all turns one to the unconstructed. One could call this the invisible world, some place where consciousness releases the seen world, dancing on the edge of the known parameters of the senses, resting between the edge of sea and land. The marvels of living in a fleeting world, sometimes engrossed, absorbed in the little moments of the senses, other times feeling the sadness of irreversible time. The world, our bodies, fading from youth, midlife, now old age. Such a small crack, needing trained attention, releasing all fabrication, infinitesimal moment after infinitesimal moment, softening the heart, so beauty and sadness holds together. Truth giving answer. How can I help knowing all this? So, I have to go to actually Kierkegaard to start this kind of piece, you know. It seems as though I have not drunk from the cup of wisdom, but have fallen into it. It seems as though I have not drunk from the cup of wisdom, but have fallen into it. And so we really come to these practices I see it again as kind of the foundation of like this center right now. It has that foundation which is really based on there's one part of it says renunciation in the sense of these precepts and keeping, in a sense, an ethical stance. In a very complex and in some ways undisciplined world. And that we have to understand that there is that this foundation has to be strong. And that it has to be strong and it has to hold up the capacity, which is the primal piece here. And then there is this stopping. You know, and we're in the process here. This particular place and time is a place where we stop. And stop the the word samadhi, you know, has so many meanings. I like just simply, you know, there's a collecting that has to happen. You know, and that collecting obviously has many levels to it. You know, but the job is as simple as that. We have to collect ourselves. And as we begin to collect ourselves, then there is this possibility of seeing, you know. And that seeing then has the capacity then to, you know, we call this insight practice. So insight into kind of the nature of how it works in some way. Yesterday when Gil was talking about this, collecting the samadhi and that there are fundamentals here in this seeing that are so foundational to how we begin to recognize. And the first piece of it is just this, you know, the truth of what they call the three characteristics. The fact that I think one of the deepest things in our quietude is seeing the dance of how consciousness lights on a thought or a sensation or the breath, but it's constantly shifting and changing. And if we try to hold it or make something out of it, we suffer, you know. And that ultimately, in these characteristics, you know, what seems, you know, it's so impersonal that it appears personal, you know. So we get seduced or kind of somehow concretizing and freezing things as who we are or how it is or the way it is, you know. But I go back to this first characteristics to me, one of the science of this practice is that it has to keep us on the edge of this truth that whatever arises passes away, you know. And so it becomes, in a sense, an investigation that we can't hold anything, you know. And then in holding it, there is consequences. You know, that's pretty simple material, right? You know, and you'll keep learning this over and over and over and over again, you know. Unfortunately, you know. And yet these characteristics are the precursor to the actual seeing itself, you know, that really this wisdom factor. Another part of this, kind of the wisdom aspect of this, is really seeing the, you know, they talk about it as the wheel of dependent origination. And it's really the wheel of causation, that all of this is causal. And it can be seen as, you know, the nature of ignorance is that it has volitional formations. Those volitional formations then, you know, come to consciousness, and consciousness then has to take on a mind-body, and a mind-body has to then take on these six senses. And these six senses, if there are six senses there, they have to make contact. If they make contact, there's feeling. The word vedana, feeling. And when you talk about wisdom, you have to stop right there. And in this wheel of dependent origination, it goes on, yes, to grasping and attachment and becoming, and then there's birth and death and all that stuff, and back to ignorance, and it keeps circling around. But we have this little place, and this little place is really where this seeing or this wisdom is, you know. And it has to do with the fact that experience It comes in simple flavors, you know. I mean, this is not brain science, by the way, you know. I mean, it's just the fact that when there is a pleasant experience, you know, that there seems to be some kind of grasping or attachment. Unpleasant, we seem to push it away. And that there is also ones that we don't particularly identify with or notice, and that's neutral moments. And these are the three flavors of our experience that happen in that Vedana, in that contact itself, the feeling base of things. And also our intelligence is there, our wisdom is there, because we unfortunately, as human beings, I wish I could say I learned, you know, through wisdom. You know, I wish I could say that, but actually, you know, it's just a lot of mistakes, you know, and recorrecting, you know, and seeing that, oh, you know, I thought that would work, and but I came up against something that, you know, it either didn't hold true or was only true from the past, not true now. So then I had to kind of reinvestigate, you know, what is it now that's happening in that pleasant and unpleasantness, you know, or that kind of that place, which if you look close enough into neutral, you'll find when a pleasant or unpleasant it seems if you hang out with it for a little while, you know. But we have to begin to study all this and recognize that there is something that is holding all this, you know, and I'm going to play with this because I seem to not be able to not do it. And it has to do with the fact that there are also what they call the three subtle characteristics, which align themselves in the fact that there's the subtleties. And that as we work with this practice, we begin to sort of break down these barriers of what we think and what we believe and even what we experience in those moments of pleasant or unpleasantness. And that's really a deconstruction process. And so we take the world that we see and we begin to say, you know, is it actually what it appears to be? Is this what it appears to be? And one part of you could say, oh yes, just when the seeing, there's just the seen. That's true. But what is it that knows? You know, in the hearing, there's just hearing. But what is known there, you know? And as the subtle characteristics, the first of them that really goes with the impermanence, is this word sunyata. You know, and it translates as emptiness, you know. And it's tricky. I think for one thing, we see it somewhat as a negative. But it's actually this, the truth of it is that it's that has the ability to let go. You know, so it knows that whatever appears through these six sense doors, that there is actually more going on here, you know. And so one has the ability to kind of release it, you know. Now, one of the things about the word emptiness and sunyata is that in our, I think, vernacular, it's somewhat a negative, you know. And so in a sense, it's kind of says no to everything. And so I think we have to be careful with it because, again, you could, you know, it's all empty. What the heck? What matters, right? So we have to be careful. This is a very tricky kind of place. And yet at the same time, there is that knows, that has the ability to see through in the sense, oh, I recognize it. In the seeing, there's just seeing. And that what it appears, but it may not be all that appears. That the actually that knows is more than just the contact between the senses and the objects. You know. The second part of this, which I like, is this word tatat, which translates as suchness. And you hear it a lot in the kind of Zen world. But I love it, because one says, in a sense, oh, it's empty. It has, you know, that I can't get attached to anything because it's not what it appears to be. The suchness says, oh, yes, look at this world. Is this place marvelous or what? You know, and so there is this dance that we're playing between the kind of this letting go and this acknowledgement. You know, oh, yeah. You know, just, you know, sometimes just the touching of I breathe, you know, or I can feel my heartbeat, you know, I'm alive. And such a privilege and such a wonder to actually know that that's happening, you know, and the practice is the subtlety of getting kind of down below all the appearances of things and recognizing, you know, that we have the capacity to do this, you know, to find at the same time the kind of releasing the emptiness of it and not holding any of it to be whatever our beliefs, whatever our views, whatever religious, all that stuff, you know, does not hold up, you know, with the emptiness. And at the same time, everything is exactly the way it is. You can't grab a molecule and run out of this room. That's not possible. You know, it is the suchness. It's the way it is here. You know. There's a word atamayata, which translates not there with the object. There's many translations of this word, but what I like about it is that somehow. There is just like in the scene, there is the consciousness, there is the eye door, and there's the object. And it's always in a dualistic kind of play. And ultimately, what is freedom about? Well, freedom is the capacity actually to release the whole world, the known world, the suchness and the emptiness of it, because either one of these you can get caught in, you know. But this is, in a sense, there is freedom, that the consciousness itself, that this there with the knowing, you know, that you have that knows is ultimately free. You know, it has always been free. It's almost like right now, if you just recognize there's something that knows, you know, behind your eyes or whatever. And that, you know, is, you know, has it ever had a problem? You know? You know, and in some ways they say, well, you can't really damage it, or it's never, it just is, you know? And that with the knowing, and it's not splitting the world off into anything. It's just this ability to hold the simplicity, maybe, of that. So that's a lot to chew on. Okay, I know. You know, but I can't do half of this, you know. You have to know that there is also, you are a Buddha. You know, you have all that the Buddha ever had. It is who you are, you know. And that somehow we get so confused and caught up in our beliefs and our histories and our storytelling, and sometimes our own magical thinking about how it all works, you know? But there's also this innate truth, you know? And then as insight happens, we begin to rely more and more that it is enough, You know, you're enough. You know, you don't have to, you know, there's something about, oh, I have to sit, I have to do it this way, I have to, you know, become a better person, I have to, you know, this is what this is all about. No. Can you learn to just love yourself? You know, for actually who you are. That you have this nature that is not different than a Buddha. And no different than the Buddha of 2,500 years ago. You know, that that same essence is you, you know. And yes, it gets covered over a lot, you know. But as we begin to settle and really understand the parameters of how this works in the sense of the sila, and that it takes that settling and you know, the thing about samadhi is also a struggle, that, that we actually really struggle, you know. So there is a sense of, I think one of the fundamentals of that is that we come to a place of peace and ease, you know. Oh, you know, that's good enough, you know. There is a result, you know. You can't just talk about, yes, there's that kind of the sila, the samadhi, the panya, but there's also a result. And one of the things I see about result is, yes, there's kind of proper seeing and knowing, you know, about this peace and ease. But there's also the kind of third piece I wanted to talk about was the heart, you know, because ultimately wisdom, you know, it, in a sense, if it sees how this all works, if it sees the characteristics, it sees the nature of suffering and how endemic, how it's built into the confusion, you know, of creating these beliefs about our past, about who we think we are. And if all that is kind of mythology, you know, stuff we made up, then we really understand that first noble truth. Oh my, you know, we are all caught in this, you know. And if we're not caught in it, we're exposed to it. And if we're not exposed to it, we're surrounded by it, you know. And that in that surrounding, you know, that as this wisdom begins to grow, then so does the heart. You know, it can't be separate. You can't separate out the wisdom from the heart, you know. That they actually reinforce and strengthen each other as we go along here. And I think sometimes more and more, you know, it's all it's about, you know. The mind finds some sense of non-struggle, some peace and ease. And then there's this ability to look into the world, you know. And each of you have, you know, it's like through the world of dependent origination, this causal conditions, that you all have these incredible talents to support and help the world in some way, you know. And it's important, you know, that somehow we don't fall asleep with this stuff. We actually find some way that we can keep the peace and ease and a way of exchange. With a world in dire need of exchange, you know, proper exchange, exchange that's coming from an understanding, you know, of this foundation of really of these precepts and the ability to, you know, to soften and listen deeper and deeper. So that we're not just creatures in reaction, but actually creatures that are have some depth of, you know, I get a little overwhelmed when I use the word wisdom. It just seems like such a big thing to me, but it's true. You know, we get a little wisdom, you know. And then that wisdom then begins to complement how the world works. You know, I'm so thrilled to be here with Gil, you know, in the sense that this whole system of heartfulness, you know, whether it's in the kitchen or how all the activities, I know there are all these boundaries, all these things that have to be done for this to operate on some level, and the generosity that happens, you know. But it comes out of, you know, that wisdom, which then turns to heart, which then turns to activity, you know. Isn't that wonderful? You know. So, I could go on and on and on, but, you know, I thought I'd just read my poem again to kind of finish, you know, it's good enough. We'll do more. So, caught between two worlds. The marvels of the bougainvillea and the hibiscus, colors that hold one in softness and beauty, delight by the visible world. The sea in its blue and turquoise, so inviting. Butterflies dancing in the warm Thai breeze. The jungle in perfect temperature of water and air. With the outer world so enchanted. Why? Why see, feel the transparency of such an ideal world? Easy to want to keep this physical world in such perfect order. Yet a mind trained to disassemble, deconstruct the visible, releasing the entire known world into its truth, its dependently co-arising. The sheer emptiness of it all turns one to the unconstructed. One could call this the invisible world, some place where consciousness releases the seen world, dancing on the edge of the known parameters of the senses, resting between the edge of sea and land. The marvels of living in a fleeting world, sometimes engrossed, absorbed in the little moments of the senses. Other times, feeling the sadness of the irreversible time. The world, our bodies, fading from youth, midlife, now old age. Such a small crack, needing trained attention, releasing all fabrications, infinitesimal moment after infinitesimal moment, softening the heart so beauty and sadness hold together. Truth giving answer. How can I help knowing all this? Just sit for a moment. you for your attention.